One of the most profound pieces of literature that can be called truly Christian is the novel of Dostoevsky, The Brothers Karamazov. I think Dostoevsky's whole opus is profoundly Christian, but there's a chapter in Karamazov that is very famous, and in fact it's even excerpted. You could probably Google it. It is a chapter entitled The Legend of the Grand Inquisitor. And the theme of this little story, which one of the Karamazov boys tells to, an atheist tells to another brother who's a monk, is that Jesus returned to earth, to Spain, in the 16th century at the time of the Inquisition there, and was arrested and was brought before the Grand Inquisitor. And the chapter simply consists of the Grand Inquisitor explaining why Jesus is so dangerous. At the end, he just finishes, "Go away and don't come back." And the Jesus figure who's been sitting there silent gets up, kisses the Grand Inquisitor, and leaves. I bring this up because there's a real symmetry between that understanding of things and the historic figure of Jesus, in that both of them, to be profoundly religious, meant they had to stand outside the orthodoxies of their day. The historic Jesus was the very summary of all things Jewish, as the Gospels of Matthew and John emphasize over and over again. And here we have the Grand Inquisitor, the Cardinal Inquisitor, sitting there with all his glorious scarlet regalia, telling Jesus why he doesn't fit. I bring this up because one of the Lucan scholars I looked at in preparing to try to say something sensible today made the point that Luke, in pointing to a Samaritan who was a heterodox Jew at best, he's called a foreigner here, an alien, he was the only one that stood as a model of real authentic religion. In other words, to stand outside the standard issue of what is supposed to go for authentic religion is the only place you can stand to be authentically religious. And so that's what this Samaritan did, and in praising God and in thanking Jesus for his cure, was doing what he was supposed to have done as a truly religious man. This has, I think, all kinds of resonance for us today, because in the seminary, when we had the treatises on the church, De Ecclesia, the church was always described there as the perfect society. Societas perfecta, which meant what? It had within itself everything to accomplish its goals. And of course, that's the view of the church I grew up with, this triumphalist church, where we were always right and everybody else was always wrong, who didn't think precisely the way we did. Couldn't go into a Protestant church without going to hell, we were told ardently by the nuns who taught me. I remember even in university, when I should have known better, I was invited to a bar mitzvah by a friend in Chicago, and I ran virtually screaming out of the synagogue and throwing off my prayer shawl, my yarmulke, because I thought I'd participated in some vile pagan ceremony, and to my shame, I say that today. It's a Samaritan, this half-seemingly half-breed Jew, who's the only really authentic or religious person. And I think this is the status of the church today, where we look at the council, the Second Vatican Council, as the Pope does, which he says is a council of continuity, and the way I think most scholars see it, which is a council of discontinuity, because it's very clear if you read the documents of the Second Vatican Council, the church, for the first time in its history, declared itself is always in need of reformation. Therefore, always deformed And this vaunted perfection is specious. It's worse than specious. It's misleading. So what does it mean to be authentically Christian? Well, the great Edward Chilowitz, the splendid Belgian Dominican who died just last year, put it very well, I thought, in a book on the church. And he said, to be a member of the church is to be a member of the loyal opposition. Which means what? Just go around saying, no, no, you're wrong, no, you're wrong, no, I hate you all. No, 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 no. It is to keep your eyes so clearly fixed on this figure of Jesus that one uses that as a criterion for assessing everything that goes on in the church. Everything that goes on in the church. And therefore, to constantly be able to criticize oneself, and above all, not just oneself, but the church itself, in all of its manifestations, including the hierarchy. To be called to follow Jesus does not mean you turn off your brain and hand it over to some hierarchy. To do that, in fact, is precisely to betray this man who, as in Paul's words, said, for freedom Christ has made us free. And that freedom does not consist in some kind of subservience. So this is not news to anybody here in this room, I suspect, but it seems to me, in the light of this text, worth reiterating. What are we called to really follow Jesus? Is to be able to look clearly at what's going on in the world, in the church, and say this is defective. We're called to something more than this. And then, of course, that's the whole basis. This is not just an exercise in cynicism or sheer rejectionism. It's an exercise of hope for what we're supposed to be, that we hope that this real community that Jesus talked about, that Paul insisted on all the time, is what we're called to. And that anything that fractured that community, by whatever means, by some kind of centralization of authority, by some kind of hierarchization of our own interior religiosity, is a betrayal. That little Samaritan guy who comes back and thanks Jesus, that little foreigner, that little alien, he's a good model, I think, for all of us.